Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast that explores the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
We sped through that.
I did it this time.
Wow.
I reworded it.
You did reword it. You said that.
That explores the world.
I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest.
How did you say it last time?
This is a podcast.
That explores the world. This is a podcast which explores the world. This is a podcast henceforth exploring the world.
Okay, whatever. I can't. My brain doesn't work like this right now. I have had like half a sandwich today and like one and a half. Anyway,
okay. So today we're going to be talking about crazy, hysterical women and why that is such a harmful term that is used.
Right. So we are on week 3 of Women's History Month.
We are.
So we kind of wanted to dive into something a little different as far as like the history of women go. You might be thinking like, why are we considering maybe the etymology behind hysteria, hysterical or
because
crazy?
It's inherently female.
To be part of Women's History Month. And it is because the history behind those words and how they've been attached and gendered throughout history is something that really needs to be discussed and talked about.
It does. So I got a lot of information from the article I sent you,
the 30.
And they say the word crazy in its earliest meaning comes from the 1570s when it meant diseased or sickly. A decade later, it was used to describe something full of cracks or flaws.
Mm-hmm.
By the 1610s, it evolved to apply to a person of unsound mind or behaving as so. And in the 1920s, jazz culture kind of tried to reclaim that word a little bit by making it seem like cool and exciting.
Crazy. Even if you look up crazy in the dictionary right now, the very first, so it does have several meanings, right? Like,
yeah.
We're crazy about this, or, you know,
yeah.
There's a lot of meanings now.
It's context. Important.
Context is very important. However, the very first definition of crazy, even now in the dictionary, is mentally deranged, especially as manifested in a wild or aggressive way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of talk about, I'll talk about personal experience a little bit. Have you ever been called crazy by maybe someone you're dating?
Yes.
In a negative way.
Yes. Yeah. I have two instances that really jump out to me. First was kind of a more long-term thing because I was a person who was in inpatient treatment and dating somebody who was not a very good person. I feel like I was manipulated a lot by being crazy into kind of and being gaslit, which we're going to talk about, into believing a lot of things that I did or didn't say or did or didn't do. And he would use that as a crutch for me and then me and myself by me being crazy, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So here's the thing about crazy, because women are far more likely to be called crazy or crazy bitches or what have you when they are not adhering to standard gender roles.
Yeah.
When we are not adhering to assigned gender roles and acting out or even being just emotional, we are likely to be called crazy.
Right. And that's the thing is that if I were to speak my mind, it would be because of, he would use crazy as saying, oh, because you've gone through these things, like, you're, what you have to say is invalid. He would, in fact, also say a lot, like, did Keegan tell you to say this? Like, he would say that.
Well, he was highly manipulative. I know who you're talking about. And he was very manipulative. He was very gaslighty.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. And then my other instance is that, so I dated this guy who I think I've talked about this on the show a couple of times, where he was like, I lost my virginity to my boyfriend in high school, and he was kind of the first guy to, like, get me to sleep with him in California and, like, the adult world, and then just, like, dropped me immediately. And I did lose my shit. Like, I was really pissed. I was on Twitter, like, fuck this guy. You know what I mean? But he reacted to it really poorly, and then years later contacted me and told me that
no thanks,
I was
by the
crazy.
Way. No fucking thanks.
Yeah.
You don't need to contact me. Even if it was with an apology, you don't need to fucking contact
me. No, and he just wanted to, like, catch up with me.
No.
And I was like, I had just left that other guy. And I'm like, whatever, I'll just have a conversation with him. And then he was like, yeah, you were really fucking crazy. And I'm like, no, bye. And then, like, 2 years after that, he tried to add me on Snapchat.
Fucking why?
I know. I'm like,
let it go, bro.
Why are you so obsessed with me? I don't get it. And I was crazy because I was having an emotional reaction to being hurt.
Which is something that we will, You know what? I was going to say it's something we'll talk about later, but why not? Why don't we just talk about it right now? So let's talk about the correlation between, you know, being labeled as crazy and being gaslit. Yeah. So being gaslit is a form of emotional manipulation that tricks women in particular, but people in general. There is no gender behind being gaslit. Men can be gaslit as well, but I feel like it's far more common of a thing to happen with women. And it tricks women into believing that their emotions are invalid. So if you are acting in an emotional way, you're often deemed to be overreacting, or you're being over emotional.
Right.
And the thing about that is when you're being gaslit, it can make you actually feel crazy.
Yes.
And I actually found out that the term behind the word gaslighting, or the term gaslit, comes from a movie with Katharine Hepburn. And I can't remember if it was called Gaslight or it was called something like that. And the movie was basically this woman whose husband would go and he would turn the gas lights in their house down every day. And so she would tell him, like, I feel like the lights are dim or whatever.
And he'd be like, no.
And he would tell her that she's crazy. Like, no, the lights aren't dim. Even though he knew all along that he was doing it.
Yeah.
And so by the end of the movie, she actually feels crazy.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is that it then calling a woman crazy and gaslighting them invalidates their beliefs. And then their opinion is up for debate because this person is saying they're crazy. So, like, let's say I thought of a Lorena Bobbitt right away when I was reading a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of crazy narrative around her. And because that narrative was being carried, whatever she had to say wasn't valid. It wasn't true because to everyone else in the room,
she's just nuts.
You've been invalidated. Yeah,
right. You're
just nuts. It takes that power completely away. And it goes to the point where it takes that whole woman's argument away in one fellow swoop, and that woman begins to even question herself. Am I crazy for doing these things, for standing up for myself, for my beliefs?
And then
like that,
when you're having these, you know, conflicting feelings of feeling like, no, I'm not crazy, and you're trying to stand up for yourself, that's whenever you start to get really emotional.
Yeah.
And whenever you start to get really emotional and maybe you're yelling
at
this point or you're crying, then it's just validating to this person that you are crazy. And it's validating to yourself that maybe you are crazy.
And it also absolves men from a lot of responsibility.
Absolutely. It really does.
By John Bobbitt saying that she was crazy, it makes...
Yeah, I don't know. Bitch was nuts.
Yeah. But what do you want me to tell you? She was crazy.
Yeah.
She wouldn't leave me alone. She was this, she was that. Like, that absolves him from any responsibility.
From anything that he did that maybe pushed her there.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's rewind.
Let's just say, I don't think Lorena Bobbitt is crazy at all.
Oh, I don't either. So let's rewind the clock all the way back.
Let's do
it. So let's go all the way back to the 4th century BC, shall we?
There
was this belief in the 4th century BC that women could be afflicted. This is kind of the first time we see the word hysteria.
Yes.
So hysteria today is actually Greek for uterus.
Yeah.
That is how closely...
I read it was Latin for the womb.
Yeah, that's how closely it is tied to
that's
women.
That's why we call it a hysterectomy.
Yeah,
hysterectomy. When you have
So everyone who's listening, like, think about the word hysterical and what that evokes for you. Almost always, first of all, you're picturing a woman, but also you're picturing somebody who is...
Unhinged. Yeah.
And it is that closely associated with womanhood that it is the word for uterus or womb. Hysteria results in symptoms such as fainting, insomnia, vaginal lubrication, and general troublemaking.
I'm fucking
love.
Why am I so
like
wet?
I'm fucking horny and I believe I want to cause some trouble. Like, let's get into some fucking trouble.
Yeah. So I have written strong sexual desire, emotional outbursts, fainting, any sort of
women be fainting, you know.
Difficult, and men pass out, women faint. You know what I mean? And it's any difficult behavior, and this was believed to be a legitimate female mental disorder.
Right.
Like,
yes.
This wasn't just like, oh, she's hysterical. No, this was like a legitimate thing.
And I can't remember who said it, so please don't come at me in my mentions if I get this wrong. But I think it was like Hippocrates or somebody who first started talking about hysteria. And he basically described a woman's uterus as like a a animal, like a squirrel that was trying to get out of her body, that like you needed to put a baby in it in order for her to calm the fuck down.
Have you ever gotten a woman pregnant? Because that doesn't, I don't calm think that a woman down.
Helps things. But you know, old-timey science. So basically any woman who wasn't behaving correctly, mm-hmm. or just didn't want to follow the rules and was sexually stimulated for whatever reason, was labeled all as hysterical. I mean, every person. Like, that's the thing.
Unless you're asexual. But yes.
Unless you're asexual. But,
but
like,
then you could still faint or go against or the gender norms.
Or have an emotional reaction to something that maybe is above and beyond what people deem to be acceptable.
Yeah. So this guy Gary Nunn wrote for The Guardian saying that it was a condition thought to be exclusive to women, sending them uncontrollably and neurologically insane owing to a dysfunction of the uterus, like you said. So it's like, there is something, that uterus in us is making us fucking nuts.
Bananas.
So we gotta take it out and give you a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
No thanks, I'm good. So I actually thought that the word loony and lunacy was
that
interesting
one's fascinating.
Too, because the word lunacy is a monthly periodic insanity believed to be triggered by the moon's cycle.
Sound familiar?
Our periods.
Menstruation, ever heard of it?
God, I fucking love you tonight so much. God damn. So the height of hysteria diagnosis that I read was in the 1850s, which just so happened to be the time that the women's rights movement was starting to gain some
speed. There's actually something really fascinating about where you can kind of see peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
So whenever hysteria in the 20th century was at an all-time high, was in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Whenever kind of, or not even, sorry, it was before that. It was in like,
it'd be like the 19th century, the 1850s.
The 1850s or so, yeah. The late 1800s, whenever the women's movement was kind of taking off, the first wave. And then, you know, you see that hysteria kind of die down, and then you see it spike again, where searches,
they're burning their bras
for crazy women. The phrase crazy woman or crazy women, it spikes in the 1950s and 60s whenever the second wave starts to kind of gain some momentum. So anytime women are like, we're about to be liberated, men lose their shit and they're like, no, 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 these women are crazy.
Yeah. So this therapist author named Amber Madison says, women demanding equality was a pesky problem and hysteria was a brilliant answer. Hysteria asked, don't these high maintenance women see they're too irrational to do things like own property, control finances, get a college degree, or cast a vote? It framed female emotional instability as a biological fact.
Yes. And if we go back to kind of Gary Nunn in that Guardian piece, he was talking about, you know, the etymology of these words. So as we have already kind of said with crazy and hysterical and lunacy, he said that they have cemented a polarization of the female and male mental states, men being historically associated with rationality, straightforwardness, and logic, women with unpredictable emotions, outbursts, and madness.
Yeah, I would love to kind of get into women in power a little bit and how those words affect.
And this is another,
see people.
It's another reason why I wanted to talk about this now, is because we are ramping up for the 2020 election.
Where a lot of women are wanting to be
involved. A lot of women are running, and we're already seeing it. The language.
Yeah.
It might not always be crazy or hysterical, although I'm sure we will see some of that. But other, like, very gendered language, like shrill, will come up a lot. You know, nagging, these words that are traditionally linked to women, and crazy and hysterical are definitely some of those.
Definitely.
Women
and there's
cannot.
There's been other words that have, like you said, evolved that mean the same thing.
Donald Trump can act like a literal man baby.
Yeah.
And people will have one way of looking at it, whereas if Hillary Clinton were to have done the exact same thing, I mean, granted, Donald Trump's not a good example because he is a man baby.
Yeah.
But if women show any amount of emotion, it is deemed to be unstable in some
way. Well, there's actually something called the Hillary Factor, which was coined by Deborah Tannen, who is a Georgetown University, I believe, linguistics professor.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls it the double binds that affect unfeminine female leaders. So let's kind of go through a little bit when we talk about powerful women. Women tend to walk a fine line between being powerful enough to be taken seriously, but not so powerful that they're criticized.
Or intimidating in
any
way. Or
intimidating, mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So, presentation of a powerful woman in the media will often take an emotional slant, where if a man had done it, it wouldn't be so scrutinized.
Yes.
It's like they're very much under a microscope, with every little microaggression or word or reaction that they have is very scrutinized in a very gendered way.
Well, Hillary, during the 2016 presidential election, she was being scrutinized for being sick.
Yeah.
Like, she had a cold, and people were like, she's weak.
Yeah, I know. I know.
They pounced on that like she had some kind of weakness rather than just being an average human being
who was under a lot of fucking stress,
agreed. Dude.
Yeah. So, Hillary Clinton's laugh was often described as a cackle.
Right.
And after shouting at a Senate committee hearing, the New York Post ran the headline, "No wonder Bill's afraid."
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So in 2008, and I got this from a Cosmopolitan article. In 2008, a woman asked John McCain, "How do we beat the bitch?" Everyone starts laughing. McCain responds, "That's an excellent question."
Oh, God.
So language reflects the cultural beliefs of a particular moment in time. And again, this is Deborah Tannen who said that. And by calling her a bitch or even referring to as Hillary, just by her first name, tells us how we perceive women in power, which is something that I never even really thought about by just referring to her as Hillary.
And it's something that we always do. I mean, think about who's running right now.
Yeah.
We either refer to them as their first name or we refer to them as both of their names.
Yeah.
Whereas with others, you refer to Bush as Bush. You refer to Obama as Obama. You refer to Trump as Trump.
Yeah.
We refer to Hillary as Hillary.
It's a weird familiarity.
Kamala as Kamala. And even with the others, I don't think I've ever called Elizabeth Warren Warren.
No.
Ever. You know,
I also don't call her Elizabeth.
But I call her Elizabeth Warren.
Mm-hmm.
I use both of her names,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it is kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah, and there was a few other examples in these articles that I was reading of other women in power. Harriet Harman was dubbed Mad Hattie thanks to Boris Johnson, and they also said she doesn't just talk, she raves.
Yeah, language is so important.
Yeah.
I think that that's something to keep in mind.
It is.
And there's a lot of similarities between this episode, when I was researching this episode, and when we were doing research for our witch episode.
Very much so. It's a witch hunt.
It's any woman who is expressing herself.
Yeah.
And so if we want to kind of continue down this path of hysteria, it kind of moves us into the early 1900s or the Victorian era, the late 1800s into the 1900s, whenever men could literally have their wives. And I think that this happened probably up and through the 20th century, where men could have their wives
institutionalized
yeah. for being hysterical,
yeah,
or unstable.
Well, yeah, and I mean, there's this guy Matthew Zadowski who is a PhD, and he says by saying emotional, it's a term to label women who you just don't want to have a voice in a situation, or you just don't want to deal with.
Yeah,
you know, when women were doing something that men would find distasteful or not in line with what they believed or wanted from their wife or girlfriend, they could easily just admit her.
Right.
Don't have to deal with the problem anymore.
You have people like Charles Dickens wrote whenever he went to visit St. Louis Insane Asylum. He commented on how insanity is obviously more prevalent in women because there are more women locked up in the insane asylum, when in reality it was such a comment on society at that time. Not only could men institutionalize their wives, if they just didn't want to deal with them, but even if maybe they weren't monsters who just didn't want to deal with their wives, this notion that women who were emotional or spoke their mind were insane was so prevalent not only among men, but also among the women themselves,
mm-hmm.
that they may not have been monsters wanting to lock their wives away. They probably actually believed there was something wrong with them that needed to be fixed.
Well, and then we can even go into very briefly, I mean, I just think about the women who were gay. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, that is something that was, you know, they were going outside the societal norms. They were institutionalized all the time because the way they thought did not line up with society's standards of how women should be.
And also, if we want to, you know, dive even deeper into it, of course there were more women in these institutions, also because they were legally powerless much of the time and held very little economic standing in society to be able to prevent themselves from ending up in a situation like that, whereas most other, like, men in society would have more power to be able to stop that from happening.
And I feel like, you know, when it comes to men being in institutions as well, because their behavior is read differently, I feel like it's a bit of a different experience. There are people, are a lot of people who, at that time, would go into an insane asylum, for lack of a better words, and they would be driven insane. Like, it's...
Of course.
It is a horrible...
It's the ultimate gaslight.
...living situation, where men, I think, in general, were probably treated a lot differently. Their opinions mattered more, their voices were probably more heard.
Well, even today...
And I think their actions were validated more than women's actions were validated as well.
I mean, even today, looking at just strict medical diagnoses, not just... sorry, they're all medical diagnoses, but physical, you know, maladies and issues, pains that women will say that they are experiencing, they are taken less seriously than their male counterparts.
Did you read about the study at Rice University about heart disease?
I don't think so.
Okay, so there was this, it wasn't Rice University. So there was this study, and I don't know where in my notes it is, but it was like this heart disease study where they basically had men and women go in. They had some of them acting very anxious. They had some of them acting very calm, both men and women, describing their symptoms to doctors. And very often women, because they say that heart disease is more prevalent in women than in men with certain diagnoses, they're more prevalent with men than women with diagnoses.
Yeah.
Because the doctors were taking the man's symptoms more seriously, whether he be anxious, whether he be calm.
Yes.
He was really listening to what he had to say, where with women, it just seemed more, again, hysterical. It didn't...
Calm down, just calm down. You're fine.
Especially when they were acting anxious, but even if they were acting just very rationally and explaining their symptoms, doctors were less likely to believe
them. Women's pain has been proven, and I wish I had, like, studies in front of me right now, but, like, women's pain has been proven to be taken less seriously amongst
doctors.
Which
is bullshit, because we go through so much fucking pain in life.
Right.
I'm one of those people where, like, if I am driven to tears because I am in pain, you know it's bad.
Right.
Like, I deal with awful cramps every month. I deal with... I've had fucking kidney stones. You know what I mean? Like,
if I'm driven to tears, it's
not good.
Yeah, listen, dudes. I don't know how many dude listeners we actually have.
It's interesting. If you look at our analytics, like, we do have some male listeners.
If you're a male listener, write into us, because I want to know. But it is one of those things. Dudes, I want you to know. I think Michelle Wolf had a bit in her stand-up where she talks about how there is a woman in your office right now whose body is, like, actually tearing itself apart, and she's in insane pain, and she's reaching her hand out and shaking your hand and saying she's fine. Because
in a pencil skirt and heels.
Because that is women's day-to-day life. Your world doesn't stop because you are in crippling physical pain.
Yeah.
And you still have to show up to work with a smile on and go to that meeting.
Yeah, and there is that whole, like, stereotype of, like, men and women getting a cold.
It is a gendered stereotype, but it exists for a reason.
I mean, come on, I've experienced it a lot. I'm not saying every man is like this, but man, my ex, when he was sick, I would have to, like, bring him medicine on a silver platter and, like, place it in his hand. Here's some water, take your medicine. Where for me, I'm like, I'm gonna get up, go to the pharmacy, go to the doctor, do this shit.
If I'm down and out, like, it's fucking bad. If I'm down and out, trust I'm in pain.
Yeah.
Like, in real pain. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing, and I do think it's deeply rooted in that women just aren't to be taken seriously because we're hyper-emotional.
Yeah.
And so we're obviously over-dramatizing whatever is happening.
Yeah.
We're being over-dramatic.
Yeah, and we can't have this episode without discussing the fact that our periods, our menstruation...
Oh, God.
Thrown in our face.
Constantly.
She can't be president. What is she going to do when she's on her period? Start a nuclear war? Like,
oh, my God.
It's just so ridiculous. It's like, yes, there are moments when I'm on my period where I am more emotional, where I am, you know, I have some PMS, but I'm not going to do some, I'm not going to go fucking kill somebody or, like, do anything so crazy. And by the way,
that's just being human. Yeah. Like, men are going to have similar times of emotional difficulty.
Didn't we talk about that where, like, men have, like, a long time ago?
Yes, I think so. Like,
where men have, like, waves of, like, PMS.
Right, they go through ups and downs emotionally that are linked to other things, not directly to their menstruation. But that whole argument is...
They don't have menstruation, Keegan, just so you know.
Right, but, you know, not linked to menstruation the way that women
is. To their menstruation. I'm like, but if a dude bled out of their dicks, they would lose their shit.
Gross. It's a really gross thought.
You've never thought about that?
No.
Dude, guys would lose their shit. Girls are like...
Oh, I mean, I've definitely thought about if men had periods, how fucking,
that's what,
like,
I mean. I'm just saying it in a more
vulgar terms. Oh, I think that men should... I've said this. They have those machines that you can, like, hook men up to so that they can feel period cramps.
I think there should be blood coming out. Like, there should be, like, little blood capsules, you know, where you have to deal with, did I bleed myself? You know, like...
Yeah, but for me... I would bleed, we're moving into, like, a period discussion, but, like, I would bleed for a solid week straight if I didn't have to be in pain. Mm-hmm. I think that men, boys, who are in, like, middle school, the same way that, like, you have to carry around a fake baby for a week, I think that boys should have to be hooked up to those machines.
Agreed.
To feel how painful it is when you have bad cramps.
Yep.
Like, you should have to be hooked up to it. We'll see how long it takes before you tap the fuck out.
Yeah, have, like, men have just, like, a contraption around their balls that just, like, squeezes every once in a while. And you're like, oh, God.
Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Anywho's else.
Back to the subject at hand.
Well, yeah, but our periods so much are related to our hysteria. You know, it's that...
Quote, unquote, hysteria.
Exactly. Yes. Like, it's when we are behaving somewhat... out of the ordinary.
She's got to be on the rack.
Do you know that episode of Everybody Loves Raymond?
Yes. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Deborah has her period and Raymond goes and gets her, like, My Doll or something, some pills.
Nothing on here for bitchy, right, Ray?
It's silent. And then she goes, there's nothing on here for bitch. Yes, girl. And he's like, I thought I was helping you.
He's such an idiot.
He's such an idiot. I mean, she's also villainized a lot in that show.
Well, I mean, that show's an interesting case study. I think we could do an entire episode and should, because it would be very fun on Everybody Loves Raymond, because I love that show. Anthony and I, it's one of the shows that we put on, like, late at night whenever we're just, like, winding down and going to sleep. But that show did a lot to perpetuate the idea of the nagging housewife and the man-child husband, and that this is just something normal and to be expected.
It is very much a sitcom archetype. And I think that, I think that all ties into the crazy, hysterical woman that, you know, like, these
women
can't be lived with.
And actually, the takeaway from that episode, even though Ray is a fucking idiot in that episode, the takeaway by the end is that... she's on her period, she's mean and completely off the rails and crazy.
Yeah.
And that is kind of the point that's made at the end of that episode.
Yeah, in turn, that just made me think of an episode of Modern Family where all the girls have their periods at the same time, and the dad, Phil Dunphy, and their son are both like, oh my God, how did this happen? And they're freaking out all day when it just turns out they just want to be heard. They just want to be loved. You know, it's like they're just feeling a little bit more sensitive lately.
That's a better takeaway.
Exactly. It's like, instead of treating it like it's this monster where it takes over your wife or your child or your friend's body, it's more of just like, maybe they just need a little extra care right now, which I don't think that makes somebody crazy or hysterical.
Agreed.
We are allowed to feel those emotions. And for me, when I get my period, like a week before, I'm crying. I do have a very emotional reaction. And as soon as I get my period...
I get pissed about every little fucking thing.
Yeah, and then when I get my period, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Okay, I feel better now. I feel better.
Hey, Madigan.
Hey, Keegan.
Have you ever been called boy crazy?
Yeah. I refer to myself as a child as boy crazy a lot.
They used to call me boy crazy when I was a child, and it was something that, like, made me feel very self-conscious. I was, but I was like, no one can know.
I mean, nobody really called me that when I was younger. It's more of a term for myself because I was obsessed with the idea of having a boyfriend.
I was a crush slut.
Same.
I had crushes on everybody.
I had a crush on this kid, Peter Odney, if you're listening to this. I had a crush on you for, like... so many years. First I will never,
and last name.
I will never forget you.
That's funny.
And, but, like, you know, there were tons in between, but I was just obsessed with the idea of, like... But no, I think that there's something problematic about that as well. But that also kind of brings up where a lot of times we call ourselves crazy or boy crazy or the crazy ex-girlfriend to kind of be like the cool chick. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, it takes that power away from someone else calling us boy crazy or crazy ex-girlfriend when we own it ourselves.
Yeah. Well, and I thought that the phrase boy crazy, I thought that the history behind that was kind of interesting. So
tell me about it.
The phrase boy crazy kind of came about as the popularity of male pop stars kind of rose.
Yeah.
There was a thing that happened in the 1940s. There was this stampede, is what they called it, kind of like in the news, where all of these teen girls chased Frank Sinatra through Times Square. Well, yeah. So it started kind of with Frank Sinatra, where they all chased him through Times Square. And the paper actually called it mass hysteria.
Yeah.
That these teen girls, it was like this case of mass hysteria.
I mean, with Beatlemania, women were peeing themselves.
Well, women were fainting, screaming. Yeah. So, yeah, then it moved on in the 1950s to Elvis, and then, of course, Beatlemania. And
One Direction, Backstreet Boys.
Leonardo DiCaprio, not a pop star, but kind of same thing.
Yeah.
People were banging on walls. And... obviously, none of those things seem to be flattering, but I found it interesting that there was a take that some have speculated that this display, perhaps like subconsciously, especially in the 40s, 50s, 60s, was kind of a protest against sexual repressiveness and the double standard of teen girls. They weren't allowed to be like outwardly sexual.
Expressive, yeah.
And expressive in the way that boys were. So it manifested in this, like, hysteria, like,
yeah.
for lack
yeah.
of
I mean, it's just
a better
interesting
word.
Because, like, when I think of, like, a man who really, really loves a certain celebrity or things like that, it's
stalkers.
Like, they're stalkers.
Yeah.
That's legit what I think of. Or I think of, like, the young boy with the poster on their wall, you know?
But it doesn't seem like there is an equivalent to young women having this kind of response teen male celebrities.
I think that men and women have different sexual responses when we're young. To a lot of things,
perhaps.
Too. I think that men have a better understanding of what a sexual release is, for lack of a better term.
Sure, and women just get over-fucking-whelmed.
Women don't know what to do with it. It's just, it's not explained to
but
us.
But
we
weren't
understood.
Taught. We weren't taught
That's what I'm
to
saying.
Do
it's
it.
Not understood.
Yeah.
So for us, it's like, we're going to start screaming and peeing ourselves. What else are we supposed to do?
Where's the outlet supposed to go? Yeah, we don't understand our feelings.
Like, no, we don't understand it. And there's this, like, and women tend to also start going through puberty much younger than boys do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you're still a child, and you're feeling all these things you don't understand, and you're excited, and you're in love, you think. So it's like, of course there's going to be these feelings that you're not handling.
And conflating...
like a mature adult woman.
Conflating obsession and love... or infatuation and love, I think. It's common for every young person, like male or female, but I think that there is something particular about young girlhood and the way that we have been taught to conflate those concepts.
Yeah.
I think that that is kind of interesting.
So but, when you were called, like, boy crazy, I had a dentist.
Oh, I don't like this already. Why the fuck is your dentist commenting on your sexuality in any way?
So, when I was young, quick story time with Madigan. When I was young, I have really large teeth.
You do have big teeth.
I have huge teeth. Imagine these. I lost all my baby teeth before I was 7.
I wish I had bigger teeth.
Imagine. No, you don't. Imagine these big-ass teeth on a, like, 3'5" little Madigan.
It's a lot of teeth.
With a gap so large between my teeth that I could stick my pinky between the bottom. My teeth were horrendous. So I would go to the dentist, and this guy, this is the song he would sing to me every time.
I don't
time.
Like it already. I don't like it. What is it?
Maddie is as pretty as a squirrel. She has big buck teeth like a beaver. She brings her boyfriend to the dentist every day just so he can see her.
Ew. Ew.
Yeah.
You're a grown fucking man.
Yeah. As he's, like, drilling my teeth, because I have cavities like crazy. My teeth are awful. He's, like, drilling my teeth. I have permanent scars in the roof of my mouth from this motherfucker. And I would be like, I don't have a boyfriend. Like, that pissed me off. When it was the whole, like, who's your boyfriend kind of thing. And I was young.
We need to discuss, like, there's something very unsettling to me about trying to make, like, couple culture cute for kids. Like, yeah. In Northwest, there was this whole thing.
I was
like,
just going to say
she's
that.
She's booed up for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Some fucking kindergartner bought her a Tiffany's necklace. And
yeah.
She bought him a gift. And then she's like, my boyfriend. I'm like, you're five. And mm-hmm. This is weird to be sexualizing five-year-olds. It's fucking weird.
So that's my horror story of the dentist that I went to as a child. And, like, I remember as soon as I told my mom, like, how uncomfortable I was with him, she's like, yeah, we're fucking out of here.
That's so gross. Let's talk about examples of crazy women in film.
Let's do it.
So, crazy women in movies.
What do you think of when you think of a woman who is very dramatic or overwhelmed in, like, an old, even silent movie era? What do they do?
They faint.
They put their hand to their head and they fall back onto the bed.
Women be fainting.
Think about every Disney movie, every Disney princess who throws herself onto the bed and sobs uncontrollably.
No, I mean, yeah, all women are fucking way over emotional in film. But something that I found to be interesting is, like, so let's take a couple of examples of quote unquote crazy women in film. Let's talk about, have you ever seen Fatal Attraction?
No, but I did read about that in an article.
Okay, so there's Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction, and have you ever seen Wedding Crashers?
Yes.
Isla Fisher in Wedding Crashers. Two women who are seemingly pretty normal on the surface, have their shit together, but they love sex.
Yep.
They fucking love sex. And that makes them crazy.
Yeah.
They go crazy, like, as soon as they fucking get that D, right? Like, immediately they go insane. And really, I'm serious.
I know. It's probably what that guy thought about me. He's like, God, I give it to her once, and she's, like, fucking crazy.
Oh my God, I thought you were talking about your dentist. I was so grossed out for a second. I'm like, you really nonchalantly threw that in there.
Oh, God, that would be a big reveal. I would not say that so flippantly. No, my dentist never mind.
Yes, we're talking about your ex-boyfriend.
Not even boyfriend, guy who got in my pants.
Yes, okay.
And then left.
But yeah, I think that there's an interesting correlation not only between crazy women and their sexual promiscuity, but also what that says to men,
mm-hmm.
because when you hear men talking about their crazy ex-girlfriends, yeah. or like, that bitch is crazy, so I want to sleep with her.
Or the opposite.
But I don't want to date her.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
she's probably wild. Like, she's probably,
I mean, she's going to be a freak in the sheets.
Freak in the sheets, but I wouldn't take her home to meet my mom.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times I think that that is kind of what... And I was reading something from How Stuff Works where they were talking about this topic, and they were talking about the difference between men wanting to date crazy girls, because it's kind of like a manic pixie dream girl type of situation where she's like fun and you can save her and like all of those things, and women who want to date bad boys.
Mm-hmm.
And in the way that, like, women wanting to date bad boys is oftentimes the issue is placed on the woman of wanting to, like, save the bad boy, mm-hmm. and still placed on us. Whereas men who want to date crazy women, them being crazy women.
Exactly.
It's not on
it's
you,
on
like, making a decision.
You don't have to necessarily change them. You're going to enjoy the crazy.
And then dump them and go marry somebody who's got their shit together.
Yeah.
But I just found that interesting that essentially it's kind of the same thing.
Right.
But women seem to take the responsibility no matter which side you're on.
Right. Well, and that makes me wonder, too, about the discrepancies between calling someone a crazy ex-girlfriend when I have a few instances where I'd be like, that was crazy when it comes to guys. But, like, a crazy ex-boyfriend really isn't a thing where I didn't watch a whole lot of this show. A lot of people say I look like the girl from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh, Rachel. No, that's a different show. I was going to say Rachel Brosnahan, but that's...
I wish I looked like her. I fucking love her. But, yeah, she's kind of like a... Like, she moves to L.A. for this guy. She's kind of stalkerish in the
beginning. Well, I mean, there you go. There's a whole show called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, but, like, if a guy did that, like, one, we were just talking about The Bachelor, first of all. So, this girl says, I'm not there with you. I don't love you that way. Like, we're not going to move forward. Deuces. She leaves. He's like,
this motherfucker hopped a fence.
I'm going to chase after her. I'm going to yada, yada, yada. Imagine if that was The Bachelorette.
Because
I hate that. I'm going to fight for her.
Well, because that's the thing. Then those are the words he used. I work on this show at work. So I've seen those clips. I work on promos in marketing. And so I've seen that clip of him hopping that fucking fence a million times. And that's the verbiage he uses is like, I am going to fight for her.
But if a woman were to do
exactly,
that.
Because we have this kind of
it
like.
It would be like.
We have this white knight complex with men where we quote unquote like want them to save us. Whereas if a woman were to do the same thing where she's like, I'm going to fight for this relationship, then she's crazy because it's like she already.
If she jumped a fence and ran
oh my
into
God,
the
are you ki-
Portugal countryside? Are you
into the
serious?
Portuguese wilderness?
I know. With dogs barking and Chris Harrison all amok, where did he come from? Is he just always sitting in the back waiting for something to go
although,
down?
Can we talk about how, like, impressive it is that Colton didn't even fucking slow down? Like, that motherfucker, like, he Terminator walked to that fence, hopped over it without breaking a fucking sweat.
8
like,
foot jump. And then
and Chris Harrison gets there and he's like, can you open the gate?
Yeah, and then apparently he tried to jump it. Chris Harrison tried to jump it, like, the next day or whatever, and he couldn't do it.
No.
And he's like, I work out with Chris, like, whatever, and he, like, he couldn't do it. But it's
but
true.
Yeah,
there's that like
double standard.
Yeah, there's the archetype of like, you know, the crazy ex-girlfriend. We don't hold the same standards up for like a crazy ex-boyfriend. When a guy, and I don't know about you, but for me, like if a guy starts doing that whole, I'm going to fight for you, I'm not going to leave you alone kind of thing.
It's
I'm
scary.
Like, it's frightening. Mm-hmm.
It's possessive.
It's incredibly frightening. Yeah. But with a girl, it's almost like exciting. It's a story to tell your guys. You know what I mean? Oh, let me tell you about crazy.
Until you're ready. Yeah. Until you're ready to get rid of her. And then you're like, this bitch was so crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
Because, and again, it takes all the responsibility off
absolutely.
That man too, because it's also like, when we are called crazy, a lot of times it is because we are showing our true emotions or being emotional about something.
Being honest. Yeah.
And by completely
dismissing
everything she has to say and just telling your guy friend that she's crazy, you're taking away all the responsibility of yourself for maybe what led her to feel that way.
Right, exactly.
Maybe that woman has had things. I know for me, I hold things in a lot with relationships, and I'm better at not doing that now, but it's like, it's not worth it to bring this up, and then something happens, and it's like, all of a sudden, it's all out.
That's why I don't do that shit anymore. I'm just like, everything is on the table as soon as it happens, because...
Same.
Because when that does happen, you might have a legitimate argument, but as soon as you explode... Then you're crazy.
Or not even explode. Just have a moment where you go back and you say,
right.
when you did this, there's this...
That's that gaslighting thing. You've been keeping a record? That's insane. You're crazy.
There's all these things where then when they're talking to their boys later and they're saying this happened, it's taking all of the responsibility away from them. Like, what happened in that conversation? Like... People always say there's two sides to every story.
Right.
What happened in that conversation that made that person have such a strong emotional reaction? And there's times where people say it's passionate or there's other things like that. That can be what it is.
Right. I really hope that our listeners are playing a drinking game or maybe I don't hope this because we could be liable for some hospital bills, but where they take a shot every time we say the word crazy, because you said it probably 800 times
already. Can we just call the episode This Is Crazy?
This is crazy. So I do want to touch kind of briefly on, because we're moving towards the end of our episode right now, and I do want to talk, though. We've talked a lot about a lot of other things, but I don't want to forget to talk about why the word crazy can be problematic in terms of mental illness.
Agreed.
So we don't want to just be throwing around this word crazy.
Yeah.
Because it can be insensitive to people who actually suffer from a real mental illness.
Right. And I feel like it's also something for me where I would be like, well, then I must be crazy when I've dealt with a lot of my mental illness.
And what does that things. Say about my mental illness?
Exactly. Yes. And yeah. it makes me feel dehumanized.
Yeah.
Both being called crazy and calling myself crazy or saying I was crazy or anything like that. It kind of dehumanizes that whole experience and situation for me. And I don't like it a lot of times when somebody either refers to me in the past as being crazy or referring to other people as being crazy mm-hmm. when they are going through something that is a legitimate mental illness.
I think it can be very ableist.
Yeah.
If it's used in that way. And as we said in the beginning of this episode, crazy now, if you Google it, if you look it up in the dictionary, it has a lot of meanings outside of strictly a, you know, mental problem.
I mean, context is key.
Context is key. So it's not like every time someone says that was crazy that
I'm
is
crazy for you or
yes,
anything like
or
that.
Or any of that is necessarily ableist language. But calling someone crazy, especially if you are referring to maybe it's in connection with a mental illness,
yeah.
is ableist and highly offensive. And I think it is also part of anyone who has dealt with any amount of... If I remember getting into fights with my boyfriend at the time whenever I was going through a deep depression or like deep anxiety... And being, there's something so much more triggering about being called crazy.
Yeah.
Whenever.
That makes you fucking crazy.
Right. Like, it does. It pushes you. It pushes you so towards the edge whenever, like, you are struggling mentally and someone calls you crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
It's completely shattering.
So it's something to be really, really aware of, yeah. like, moving forward. When you're talking to people.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like you said, we've used the word crazy a lot in this episode. And I think that, you know, within the context, it's not like we're saying can't say the word. We just said it 5,000 times. But it is very important to understand the power of our words in general.
Yeah.
You know, the power of what we say. And that's why we have all of these linguistics, you know, experts who talk about the differences between words that we use between men and women and different words that we use when we're describing different people's experiences.
Absolutely.
That's important to remember and to be aware of when we are talking to people.
Yeah.
And how our words can affect those people.
Yeah. Words matter.
They do.
I think that that's kind of the conclusion of this.
And I feel like a lot of that even goes into like representation in general.
When it comes for sure.
Mental illness or sexuality or gender, like words in general are so heavy and have so much weight to them that we need to be aware of the language we're using, which is why we really enjoy when people, you know, call us in and tell us when there's certain things that we say that could be harmful to somebody, because that's never our intention.
And you know what? I would love to hear from listeners. Are there times when you've been called crazy?
Yeah.
And like what was your reaction to that and how
it's
did you
always
respond?
It's pretty much either gonna be you leave or you like lash out. Because it is such a hurtful word.
Yeah. Tell me how it made you feel. Cause like I you know, I think people need to understand that. Like, and yeah. I think that men especially need to understand that because
But that's what I'm curious about, too. Like, are there men who listen who have experienced that as well? Have
sure.
they ever been felt belittled by someone calling them crazy?
Yeah, and if you have, like, let us know. But I do want to say, like, particularly for women, because we've just gone into the entire history of, like, the word lunacy and the word hysteria and the word crazy and, like, where they came from. And in the context of womanhood. And so I just want our male listeners to understand that even if not on an entirely conscious level, women feel that. Like, we feel the weight of, like, women being called crazy for generations.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's something inherently in us where it really does. It's a low blow.
It's a low blow.
Yeah.
So think about that. For something that, like, it might not mean anything to you.
And you may have even said it in anger or in not meaning it. And in that case, just immediately own up to it and apologize. That's not what you meant.
Right, right. You know? Explain what you meant.
Yeah.
You know, but there are better ways of dealing with an emotional situation or an argument
yeah.
than to go straight to crazy. Because yeah. that will make a woman crazy.
Yeah. If you feel like a woman is acting crazy, instead of just having that blanket term, why don't you discuss with that person how their behavior is making you feel. I feel like it's very classic therapist technique. When you do this, I feel blank.
Right.
Instead of immediately blanketing a situation with you're being crazy.
Yeah.
Because that takes all the responsibility off of yourself
and all onto the responsibility other person.
Onto the other person.
And I do want to just touch on really quickly, because that just made me think of something. I was at work and there's a lot of TVs at my work because I work at ABC. And so I was watching The View, which I would never do, like, on the day-to-day. Not that there's anything wrong with watching The View, but I just wouldn't usually. And one of the women on The View, who I don't really recognize, but she was talking about how, and I think this is a pitfall that women fall into sometimes, she was talking about how, like, you gotta show them you care, you gotta show them that you're fucking crazy. And, like, you're willing to be, like, crazy. You gotta break your own shit so he knows that you can't be, like, messed with. You know, like, you gotta know that you're, like...
That's the way your relationship works, boo.
Agree. Like, I was like, ooh, that seems like not how your relationship should work.
I feel like that's not something you should tell the general public,
but I do
whatever.
Feel like some women get into this, like, they fall into this thing where they're just like, you want fucking crazy? Oh, I'll be fucking crazy. Yeah, you know what I mean? And that somehow makes them, like, stronger because they're willing to be, like... I'll fly off the... I'm not afraid to fly off the fucking handle.
I always get a chuckle out of, like, in movies when they say things like that. Where they're like, oh, you think I'm being crazy?
Oh, you want crazy?
You don't want to see crazy.
You haven't seen crazy.
Yeah. Like, that shit I love. Yeah. I love that shit.
Yes, but also don't do it.
Don't do it.
That's the final word. Don't do that shit.
You threaten it. You don't do it.
Yeah.
Just don't.
But
we're rational human beings.
If you have stories that you would like to share, we're always open to it. I love that our podcast has become a place of community where people can kind of get together and talk about things. So if you want to share any of your experiences with being called crazy and how that made you feel, if you're a male listener who wants to write into us, we would love to hear from some male listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Please email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can also get us on Instagram. You can DM us at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. You can get us on Twitter. Our Twitter is YANF Podcast, YANF Podcast. You can also find us on Facebook. We have a business page and a Facebook group. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us there. We love to see that.
We love it so much.
Yeah.
It makes us crazy.
Oh my gosh. I am crazy for reviews.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. That's three more shots y'all have to take. All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening this week. I really hope that you enjoyed our third episode for Women's History Month. We're looking forward to one more episode. Thank you so much. With all of that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye.